Welcome back to Eco Talk. I am pleased and honored to have Montana Governor Brian Schweitzer on the line, joining us along with the NRDC's Dave Hawkins, director of the Natural Resource Defense Council's Climate Center. We're going to talk about the grand plans underway, spearheaded by the governor in Montana, to develop coal reserves and to supposedly, hopefully, help wean us off foreign oil. We'll find out more about the technology of it and maybe some of the politics around it. And we'll hear from Dave Hawkins in terms of the pros and cons of what Governor Schweitzer is getting a lot of publicity for. And that's terrific. If nothing else, it's focusing mainstream attention on our need to get off fossil fuels, particularly oil, and also turn to more renewable forms. And also just to be more innovative and creative in coming up with new ways to create energy. So thanks for joining us.
Well, it's great to be with you today.
Governor Schweitzer, you do have plans to develop the coal reserves under the eastern plains of Montana, saying it will help wean the nation off foreign oil. You said there's enough coal in the ground in Montana alone to essentially power the entire country. Now, we're an environmental show, of course, Eco Talk, and coal has a pretty bad reputation. We've done some talking about clean coal, but I understand what you're proposing is not the burning of coal, but actually turning it into a clean, high-performance diesel fuel.
Absolutely. You know, coal is a four-letter word if we continue to burn it in the way that we have for the last 100 years. And the technology that we have used works something like this. You dig the coal, you crush it, you ignite it, and you create a big ball of flame, and that flame superheats some water. You make a steam. That steam goes through a jet, and that jet turns a turbine. The turbine generates electricity, and then you build a great big smokestack. And you build that smokestack high enough so that all the mercury and sulfur that you produce at that plant goes to somebody else's backyard because you don't want it at home. Unfortunately, the world is full of somebody else's backyards now. For example, China, which is rapidly increasing their middle class and their demand for electricity, is on a binge of building these old kinds of power plants using old coal technology. And at the rate that they're growing, within the next 30 years, they will produce more mercury and sulfur and carbon dioxide in China alone than the rest of the world has during the last 100 years. Now, that technology is the technology of the past. Coal is the fuel of the past, if that's what folks think is the only way of producing energy from coal. But this project that I'm talking about and this potential includes removing the energy from coal and not allowing the mercury and sulfur to be exposed to the atmosphere and to sequester the carbon dioxide. The greenhouse gases that are produced when you burn coal can be separated as a pure carbon dioxide and pumped back into the earth to sequester it so that it's not released to the atmosphere. Now, this technology is not new technology. The technology has been around for a while. But the problem is it's been so much cheaper to drill oil from around the world and make our fluids from that oil. Now, we have the potential of actually converting coal either to electricity or to diesel, aviation fuel, or gasoline without creating the pollutants. The devil's in the details. If we're simply going to dig coal and use it the way we have in the past and dump a bunch of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere and create a lot more mercury and sulfur for our children to contend with, then that's the fuel of the past. But we believe that we can do a much cleaner job. How much coal do we possess? Well, America has more coal than any other country in the world, and we have enough coal that using this process, should we choose to do so, we could produce all the fuel and energy that we need for the next 150 years without importing any energy from any place else.
Are there any gasification prototype plants in operation yet?
Actually, in Beulah, North Dakota, they've been using coal gasification since 1984. Jimmy Carter recognized the problem that we had with imported oil when we were only importing 48%, and his plan was to build hundreds of these in North Dakota, Montana, and Wyoming. But then, of course, Ronald Reagan was elected and the world changed. And so that one has been running since 1984. They actually sequester the carbon dioxide in oil fields in Saskatchewan. There are other IGCC plants that are operating around the world. That's integrated gas combined cycle, which are using this technology. The beauty of a place like Montana is that we possess coal to produce the energy, and we also have oil fields where we can pump the carbon dioxide back into the earth. This is called enhanced oil recovery. You kill two birds with one stone. That's putting the carbon back into the earth so it doesn't create greenhouse gases, and it increases the pressure and viscosity in that oil zone, so you actually enhance your oil recovery.
And to find out how safe that may or may not be, and just overall environmentalist perspective, we're going to bring in the Natural Resource Defense Council's Dave Hawkins. He's director of the NRDC's Climate Center. Thanks for joining us, Dave.
Thanks very much.
So I'm sure you've heard about this before. You just listened to the governor describe it. What's your impression?
Well, first, I want to say the governor's been very generous with his time in reaching out to the environmental community, and he and I have met personally, directly to talk about this, and he's met with the environmental community in Montana to discuss his vision here. And I would say that, you know, one thing that that the United States could definitely use more of are governors that have a vision for using energy in a genuinely clean fashion and a very clear public commitment to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So on that score, you know, we agree completely with the governor's sentiments on how to deal with energy, and I agree 100% with his characterization of the old-fashioned way we've been using coal up to now. We essentially put it in a box and we burn it, and then, as he points out, we need a big smokestack because we leave too much of the dirt in the gases that escape from the production plant. The challenge on taking coal and, in effect, through a process, putting it into our gasoline tanks is that there still will be carbon in the fuel that goes into the gasoline tanks, and unlike the coal unlike the CO2 from the production plant, it won't be possible to capture that carbon that's in your gasoline tank and mine. That'll go to the atmosphere. So we have to start a strategy that not only cleans up the process of making motor fuels, but we also have to have motor fuels which themselves do not contain as much fossil carbon in the fuel itself. One way that the governor's vision could be harmonized with that objective would be to be thinking about a hybrid system where we are not only gasifying coal to help produce motor fuels, but we are also gasifying and otherwise converting biofeedstocks, meaning switchgrass, meaning other types of crops that are grown for energy production. And if we capture the CO2 from those production plants as well, one, we'll have more CO2 to pursue some of these enhanced oil recovery opportunities that the governor mentioned. And two, we will actually be putting CO2 in the ground that was taken out of the air in the previous growing season, and that will get us on the path of lowering the global warming emissions from our use of transportation fuels.
Are there any environmental or public health concerns about injecting CO2 into the ground at increasingly large levels?
Well, CO2 injection is something that has to be done carefully. You have to select the sites carefully to make sure you've got a site that where it can be injected safely and that where it will not come back up. We have operations going on in the U.S. and in Canada today. In the U.S., we're injecting about 30 million tons of CO2 a year, mostly in the Permian Basin. There are a couple of projects also in Colorado and Wyoming, and the Permian Basin being in the Texas-New Mexico region. And those projects were not designed to keep the CO2 down there forever, so we don't know whether those projects will keep the CO2 down there forever. But we do believe that it is possible to design projects and reservoirs, underground reservoirs, where the CO2 will be kept down there forever. And
okay.
It would be helpful to give you just one bit more detail on this whole CO2 injection.
As long as it's
process.
Quick, we have less than 2 minutes in the segment, so go ahead and give us a quick.
Sorry.
Scenario.
Most people think of a big cavern where we're going to put CO2 under pressure. That's not what we're talking about. Essentially, we're talking about a big, salty, porous rock formation that is about a mile below the surface of the Earth, and it is overlain by a very thick, impermeable layer of rock that will prevent the CO2 from getting back to the surface.
Okay, I want to ask the governor about costs. I understand it can be as much as $1.5 billion to $2 billion to construct a single coal gasification plant. If that's the case, how are you going about raising funds? I imagine it's going to involve private and public funding.
Well, the bottom line is you can make diesel or aviation fuel for about $1 a gallon, and the costs of that are about 50 cents for the construction cost, that $2 billion you just mentioned, and about 50 cents of it will be labor and the cost of coal. Look, when you can make fuel for $1 a gallon and people are paying $2 right now, capital
more
is
than
lining
that in some
up
places.
Right now, because
mm-hmm.
this is a great business proposition.
Okay, we want to thank you for joining us. We've been speaking with Montana's coal cowboy, as they call him, Governor Brian Schweitzer, also the NRDC's Dave Hawkins. If you'd like more about today's show, our topics, and our guests, please go to our website at www.ecotalk.net. Stay with us when we come back. In our Partners Corner, we're going to be talking about how it's possible that the EPA could have allowed pesticide testing on women and very young children. We've been wanting to do that story for some time. It has lots of ramifications, so stay with us as EcoTalk continues.